You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the podcast network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, August 19th, 2009. This is episode 93, Back to School with Technology. It's time again for another episode of the Wells Tech Podcast and another Wednesday that we get together and talk about technology, but not just technology, but technology and ministry. Joining me to help me do that, as always, is Sally Draper. Good morning, Sally.
Good morning, Martin, and I'm joining you from beautiful Sleepy Eye. You didn't say that this morning, but oh my goodness, is it nice, and just in time for Buttered Corn Days, which is coming up on Friday.
Is that the big annual festival there?
Oh my goodness, it is the highlight of the year, you bet.
So it's not just corn days, it's Buttered Corn Days.
That's right. We have a Del Monte plant in town that donates corn. You get all the free sweet corn that you can eat that day. And
I can just see it now. Those stalks being dipped into, or those husks being dipped into the hot bat of butter.
You got it. You got it. So it's a little taste of heaven right here in Sleepy Eye.
And lots of wet naps, right?
Yeah, it's a little bit messy. So, man, you got a good vision of this, Martin.
That's right.
We're looking forward to it. We count down to Buttered Corn Days every year.
Beautiful. We were just at the State Fair, and that's a big deal there, too, along with everything on a stick. You know what the big thing on a stick was this year at the Wisconsin State Fair?
What's that?
Chocolate-covered bacon.
Oh. Heard a lot about bacon in the news. Bacon is very popular.
That's right. It's all about bacon. But our show is not about bacon. Our show is about back to school. And that's just coming up around the corner. Actually, my daughter goes back this Friday back to Luther Prep. When do your kids start?
Not until 2 weeks, August 31st. My son starts high school. He's starting at MPL. That's a pretty big step for us to have a high schooler.
Okay. Well, we are going to talk about what it might take for a student here in the 21st century to get ready to go back to school, and specifically, what kind of technologies do they need to be a good student? And we have an interview coming up with Joe Dufour, who is the Educational Technology Director and Assistant IT Guy at Fox Valley Lutheran. That's one of our area Lutheran high schools up in Appleton, Wisconsin. So we're looking forward to that. But before that, let's talk a little bit in our own minds. What does it take for a student today to get ready for school, and especially in regard to technology?
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of good resources out there to give you a good jump start, mm-hmm. good idea of where to start. Lots of ideas about different software that they can take advantage of that would allow them to very cheaply or freely to do a lot of the functions that they need to do mm-hmm. as a student. Certainly, we've highlighted before the many Office applications, either online or even downloadable local Office, open Office software that's available for free. But there's so much more now, especially with the evolution of the Web 2.0 apps.
Oh, yeah.
You can find applications for everything, certainly mind mapping, a lot of things related to bibliographies. I think we saw BibMe come up a lot. In a lot of the searches and things.
That was just a total pain for me in school. I don't know about you, but back in the old typewriter days, getting that bibliography right, now you got tools. You just throw the stuff in, and out pops your bibliography. Very
right.
cool.
You can even pick your format. So mm-hmm. if your instructor is requiring Turabian format or Chicago or whatever.
And
I
never even heard of some of these, so that's got to be seriously good.
very good stuff. So, you know, there's lots of ways that you can store your data online, and lots of study helps out there as well. So if you're looking for sites and things to just do additional research or study on a particular topic, you want to be keyed into some of those as a student as well.
And we've talked about a few of these tools for business use, but I think they apply to student use as well. One tool that we've talked about in the past has been DIGO, which essentially allows you to annotate the web, and I would think that's a great research tool for students too. Is there writing a paper or doing some research to be able to take notes right within the context of the web rather than disassociating that process with the paper and pen and having that beside you, you can put it right there in line where you're doing it and then come back to it and kind of build your paper that way.
Absolutely. And, you know, one thing about DIGO and many of the other tools that are out there is the social aspect
right.
of them. And, you know, with DIGO, if you're working on a group project and you can all annotate and share links and things like that, that's going to be super powerful. And I know, you know, group projects are really big at the high school and college level, and that's a great thing because it's really preparing our students for what they're going to face in the workforce.
Yeah, that Web 2.0 is really good at collaboration, and it's getting better. So that's a win for students of 2009. Any other things in the software realm, Sally, we should talk about?
Well, you know, we'll share a couple of, you know, lists and links mm-hmm. and things that have different web apps for students. One in particular that for those that are using Microsoft products, Microsoft's put together a whole page with essential resources for students, everything from calendars and templates and things to just different inspiration for time management and, you know, storing videos, all kinds of helpful things on this Microsoft page as well. So
yeah,
make sure and have a link to that.
It's divvied up by three categories, of course, students, but there's also a section for teachers and a section for parents. So I would really encourage our folks to take a look at that. I think there's probably something there for everybody.
Yep, I'm a parent that needs to learn, so I'll be checking that out.
Lifelong learners, yes.
Yes.
So that's the software side. Let's talk a little bit about hardware. When you're talking about getting a child prepared for school, what's some of that essential equipment that they might need to think about?
Well, I think we're going to hear Joe speak to this a bit when we play his interview. But the first thing at the top of his list was a flash drive.
Yeah.
So,
mm-hmm.
you know, I think everybody jumps immediately to having an actual laptop or something along for the ride. But at the high school level, they really want them to just be able to transfer their files easily using flash drives. So,
mm-hmm.
and man, have the prices come down on that. I think you can get a 4 gig flash drive for under $10 with the sales that are going on now. So,
yep, and that should hold everything, including the audio and the video, the media needs that are so essential today.
Absolutely. And then obviously the next step would be some type of internet connectivity.
Mm-hmm.
And you can do that with a lot of different flavors now. It used to be laptops, but they've become the heavy end of things. There's netbooks, and there's even, you know, devices like the smartphones, like an iPod Touch or an iPhone or whatever, that allows you to connect and do your internet-based research right there on the equipment that you have. So
yeah. Netbooks seem like a more and more a viable solution. The screen sizes are getting a little bit bigger. They've always had the nice size, let's say, for a student, probably better than for us old folks who have trouble seeing smaller screens and have trouble hitting smaller keys, but maybe ideal for a student. And the pricing on some of these are hard to pass up. You can find a real quality netbook or notebook at this point for $300.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, more and more people are getting these at a younger age.
Mm-hmm.
So certainly by the time you're starting college, I think most colleges are requiring you to come with a laptop these days. But even at the high school level, I think that more and more schools are open to the students having laptops along with them in the classroom and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I guess one question that raises for me is the security of it. You know, do the kids need to carry the laptop with them to the bathroom to make
mm-hmm.
sure it's not going to get stolen or whatever? And I'm not quite sure how to address that one.
Yeah, that's a concern. And, you know, the same applies to any kind of electronic equipment that a student might take with them to school, whether that be an iPod or a netbook or a notebook or whatever it is. So, yeah, there's obviously a level of awareness that I think every student needs to kind of take with them to school. Maybe not so much, and maybe I'm fooling myself that that's not as much of a big deal on an elementary school campus, but certainly on high school and definitely on college campuses. So definitely something to be aware of. Just want to circle back to the netbook conversation again. One downside of netbooks is they typically have slower processors, and their video cards are usually integrated, not discrete or separate graphics cards. So they don't play video extremely well. I think you can get it to play, but it's going to slow the system down, and you may not have great performance. So if you anticipate using a lot of those kinds of things, having to do video editing or those kinds of things, a netbook is not going to fill the bill there.
Yeah, my son, who's entering high school, actually bought his first laptop this summer, and he didn't go the netbook way because he wanted to have, the speed and the graphics to go along with it and stuff, So for the investment, he went ahead and went the direction of a laptop, which, as you said, was basically about the same price as a netbook these days. They can get really affordable.
Yep.
So.
Yep. Very good.
So we also have a few links we want to share for teachers. Mm-hmm. Teachers are getting ready to go back to school or maybe have already started. And there's some great templates from Microsoft Office as well as from Google Docs that are specifically for teachers. There's clip art available and also calendaring links that we wanted to share with the teachers as they prepare for the new school year.
Yeah, the web is an amazing thing when it comes to – and very timely. All these things are pretty new resources, so I think content providers are looking for what's timely, what's hot, what's going to get some traffic, and they're putting together some excellent resources, especially some of these larger vendors like Google or Microsoft.
Yep, I love it when I see those blog posts that are titled the 15 Essentials or whatever it is, because, pretty typically you can find one or two things that you hadn't heard of that are really impressive on those kind of lists.
Very good. Good. So check out the show notes for all of those links. We've got probably a dozen of them out there for you as you prepare to go back to school or as your kids do the same. So with that, let's take a listen to our interview with Joe Dufour, as I mentioned, from Fox Valley Lutheran. Also want to welcome Joe to the Technology Advisory Committee. He's one of the newest members to that. That's a committee that advises me and my staff on direction for technology initiatives within the Synod. We have a group of nine people who do that. Joe is one of the newer members there, so thank you, Joe, for that. And let's listen to our conversation with Joe. Joining us today is Joe Dufour from Fox Valley Lutheran. Thank you so much for joining us, Joe.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
And Fox Valley is in Appleton, Wisconsin, correct? It's one of our area Lutheran high schools?
Indeed it is. We're nestled here at the northern edge of the Appleton area.
And what do you do there at Fox Valley, Joe?
Well, first and foremost, I am definitely just an educator, but I also function also as the educational technology director here at school, and I help out with some of the IT stuff too with our IT program.
Go ahead, Sally.
I was just going to say it's interesting to have the chance to talk to you. I have a son starting high school at Minnesota Valley Lutheran this fall,
sure.
and we're really curious about technology in the high school setting, and so it's good to get a chance to pick your brain and see what the students can expect as they go back to school this fall.
Mm-hmm. Sure, now, and I've even done a little consulting with MBL, so
cool.
In terms of technology. So.
Now, in my dealings with you and with Matt Schlevine there at FVL, my perception is, and I'm not sure if it's accurate or not, but that FVL is fairly progressive in regarding the use of technology. Maybe you can outline for us, how do kids use technology there? What components are in place?
Sure. We were definitely blessed with, all the way down to the infrastructure here. When we built a new building, we built it with the intention of giving both the students and the teacher, full technological capabilities, at least that was our hope, and we do our best, obviously, to strive to continue with that, and some of the things that we use are anything from, we've got smart boards equipped in quite a few of the rooms, or symposiums, whatever you want to call them. They're basically interactive screen modules, whether they are interactive whiteboards or interactive screenshots. They are used in probably about a third of our classrooms to half of our classrooms.
Cool.
We have approximately 14 of them in our school right now.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then besides the in-the-classroom interactive sort of digital utilities, we've got Moodle, which is an online or an intranet at this point for our students in-house to submit, see, and use a digital classroom. Teachers are able to put their class materials out there, assignments. They're even able to put online quizzes on Moodle where students can take them after school hours, during class, if you can make it into a computer lab.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically a way of interacting or offering class time and materials, but doing it in an online format.
Whenever the student's ready to consume those, right?
Exactly, or whenever the teacher wants them to consume them.
Right.
Exactly.
Exactly. Okay.
Yep. So a few of the other little things are, for instance, we offer net storage, which is just a utility so that students can access all of their information here at school. Well, let me back up a step, because every student here has their own drive where they can store their own information. We, you know, carve out a little bit of space on our hard drive for them, and they, so they have their own space, but they are also able to tap into that hard drive from home using something called net storage, where they can log in, grab a, and download a PowerPoint in case they forgot to put it on their flash drive to come home, or in case the email attachment didn't work quite right. It basically gives them a whole new realm of capabilities in terms of transferring things to and from school.
Sure, and that's, I assume, through a web browser?
Exactly.
Awesome.
Yep, they can access that right through our internet.
Now, is that a free utility, or is that a service that is provided that you have to pay for? How does that work?
That is a service that is provided because we are part of something called Novell. And Novell, as you would know, is basically how we run a lot of our utilities around here, our server utilities, whether it's our group-wise email system or if it's, you know, net storage, which is just another component of that Novell system.
Right. There are there are equivalents, I think, on other operating systems or other network software, too. But that's a great idea.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And I was just going to comment on that's probably a good lesson learned when you were talking about building in technology. When you build the building, that's obviously the easiest time to do it. It's so much tougher to retrofit a building. I know you guys were in an older building before and probably jumped at the opportunity to say, hey, we got to wire this thing up because we know that technology and education is going to be very core to what we do.
Yep. And, you know, as things progress here, wireless is becoming easier and less expensive to install as an infrastructure. And so hopefully in the future, even some of our grade schools that maybe don't have the same, you know, capability that we did, which is building a brand new site or structure, might still have the ability to
use wireless
introduce
technology.
Some of these same concepts. Yeah,
yeah, absolutely.
That we use.
Much cheaper than trying to poke holes in the wall, run wire, whatever. Yeah.
Yep. So those are some of the basics. We've got software and stuff that we use that's kind of unique here at our school, but I don't know if you're looking for things like that.
Well, I'm just wondering, as a, you know, a parent or a student preparing to come to school at Fox Valley or any of our Lutheran high schools, you know, what kind of things do they need to do? What kind of hardware, what kind of software do they need, either at home or on a laptop or whatever, to be ready for high school and the new millennium?
Yeah. Well, let's start with hardware, I guess. At this point, I think in at least our American education, one of the most important things that I would recommend having is one of those little flash drives or jump drives, and that's just to make your information portable. And there are, you know, file sizes are growing each and every day with respect to different software and how it's becoming more robust. And so having a flash drive or a jump drive allows students to more easily transport those larger file types instead of trying to stream them across, you know, of some certain bandwidth or whatever it is. But that's just a tiny little piece of what you can bring to the educational front.
Fairly inexpensive,
cheap.
Yeah, absolutely.
You can get a $10, 8 gigabyte flash drive, which is not bad. So
yeah, I saw 16
which
gigs
is nice,
for
they're
under 40
easy
bucks.
To lose.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, more and more students are definitely showing up with laptops, and you're seeing more and more schools develop what's called one-to-one programs where every student is equipped with a laptop. We aren't quite there yet, but, you know, there are schools definitely out there that are doing this and making use of the actual structure of the laptop and how portable it is and the software that you can utilize from it. And now we have things like netbooks where you can, you know, equip the entire student body at a cost of around $200 a piece. So that's really not bad. But some of the things that, in terms of software, where we want our students to know this, hopefully coming into school and be able to utilize these utilities properly, would be anything for, like, office tools, office documents, whether it's Microsoft or it's OpenOffice, it probably doesn't matter too terribly much. OpenOffice is really growing quite a bit lately, and it's obviously free as the user, if your audience doesn't know that already. Mm-hmm. But it does most of what, you know, Microsoft does. However, the thing that I wanted to make sure students understand or can use as they come into high school or grade school or whatever it is, or even throughout their educational careers, is the use of office documents, whether it's presentation software or Word document software, Excel software. Those are the three big ones. But beyond that, I think one of the major growing issues in education and in the world would be things like photo editing software, which isn't necessarily used for photo editing anymore. We're talking things like Adobe Photoshop, where they learn how to create graphics, create bulletins, make good streamlined-looking newsletters, anything like that in those terms, so that they can learn how marketing works, how to create a good-looking PowerPoint slideshow, whatever it is. So there's the office documents, and then there's the graphic documents.
Good design skills. Yeah, absolutely. Yep. And page layout kinds of applications that go beyond a general word processor.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I was as you were talking, I was thinking back to when I was in high school, and you know, maybe when we were all in high school, one of the first classes that you had to take was a typing course. And I would imagine today that students come in knowing pretty much how to type. You know, they've been with a computer through grade school now, and they've learned how to use a keyboard. So keyboarding skills have got to be something that is an expectation of students coming in?
Yeah, we are definitely leaning more and more on our grade schools to bring our high school students in as being proficient on the keyboard. Mm-hmm. Now, granted, a lot of them do come in, and they might have the skills. They may not be the proper skills. They may not have their QWERTY assignments all properly locked down with their fingers, but they definitely are faster and more proficient with the keyboard. So we have to put less and less of them through our keyboarding classes. Mm-hmm. I think one of the things that maybe is a deterrent in learning the proper keyboard structure is texting.
Yeah, I was going to say, they probably know better how to text.
With their thumbs on the keyboards almost, yeah.
With the T9 stuff, yeah.
Yeah. But other than that, they're definitely more proficient. So
good.
I'm thinking back to my high school days, Martin, long time ago, and remembering the very first Apple computer that we had my senior year of high school. That was such a huge thing. And, you know, certainly technology has changed for students. Probably you could look back just the last 5 years or so and look at some of the changes that have happened there at Fox Valley with the students that are coming in, keyboarding being one of them. But what are some of the other things that are changing?
Some of the other things that are changing, not just at FEL, but probably within a lot of the educational realm or educational world, are things like collaborative software, cloud computing software, things that can be done not necessarily in-house, where we're talking about in this building, where you can do word processing, where the actual Word document is held off-site on someone else's server. Mm-hmm. So multiple students can access that same document and work together on a research paper without ever having to be in the same room or without having to worry about whether they're in a certain classroom on a certain computer. So that's one of the biggest advancements, is that collaborative.
Yeah, that's got to be a great blessing to the educational process, where students outside of class can work on projects collaboratively rather than, you know, I remember having to go to the library and meet people to work on group assignments. Now that can be done in the cloud. That's awesome.
Absolutely. Yep. And I teach a couple of classes at the collegiate level where I teach teachers how to basically get students involved in what I call CRPs, collaborative research projects, and that's exactly what they do. And I teach them how to take that educational material and blow it up into a more open, more user-friendly, and more accessible sort of format.
Mm-hmm. So is that where you think things are headed as far as educational technology, cloud computing, collaborative projects, those kinds of things? Or where in general do you see educational technology going?
Oh, I definitely see education. I mean, you can feel the educational technology pulling that direction already. I mean, there's tons of people that have already jumped on that bandwagon a long time ago, and there are people who are dragging their feet, obviously. But, yeah, so the online computing, the shareability, even things like Skyping are in our education's future. Imagine that you can't bring an author into your classroom, a children's book author, for instance, and you really would love to have a children's book author visit your classroom. Well, now you can, because you could actually Skype with them. You could even put their picture up on the screen, or possibly even do a video Skype with them, have students write questions out ahead of time and have a little microphone and talk back and forth with that author. What a great resource mm-hmm. that simple, free piece of software could be. You know, anything like that where we talk about social interactions or social technologies, even Facebooks and things like that are being used in the educational realm for good purpose too. They're not just frill and fun. And then, like you said, the cloud computing, anything that can be done in the cloud where people can collaborate or research or come together outside of a building is obviously has great potential for the education industry. I think if we're looking way, way into the future, I think the interactive media education is probably where things will go 5-10 years from now, where we're talking almost like gaming for education, where things are so interactive for the students, where they log on at home and they can actually move pieces around on the screen and totally interact with that educational model. That's probably where things will head way off in the future. Mm-hmm. But for now, yeah, we're talking cloud computing, social technologies.
And so I think all that we're talking about here in this whole episode of Wells Tech relates to preparing our students for the future, because one day they aren't going to be students. They're going to be our leaders and our church leaders and school leaders as well. And so how do you see, you know, students best doing that? You know, what's going to wrap all this up for them and make them productive adults when they reach adulthood in this technology age?
Yeah, even the students that we have that are going out into, you know, the regular lay world need some of the same skills that I'm about to talk about. But obviously, yeah, we've got students that we need to make sure are our next educators, are our next pastors and teachers, whatever it is, so that they're equipped with the correct technology for the next generation. And realistically, if you take a look at what it is that they need to be equipped with, it's sort of similar to what they've needed to be equipped with their whole lives, but it's just got a little different flavor now. One of the things I would definitely say that we need to teach our students is to be able to learn how technology works. And I know that sounds daunting and almost crazy for me to say that, but realistically, we take a look at how God's natural things work. Why wouldn't we take a look at how God's, you know, man-given abilities to create technology and how that works? We should probably teach our students some of the basic things, like just the fact that a computer runs on zeros and ones and how a sound card or a processor works. And they don't need to know the deep, nuanced pieces of how these things work, but to get a general understanding of that will at least create an interest. It will help them create real-life connections about maybe why their DVR isn't working quite mm-hmm. the way it's supposed to, or why the computer projector isn't, you know, coming out as clear as it should. Those little things in our life that make those true real-life connections are what create that long learning interest in technology and help alleviate a lot of the stresses that come with technology and actually help build for the future of technology, those tiny little things that, we should be teaching our students and our teachers about technology.
I totally agree, Joe. We live and will continue to live in a world surrounded by technology. We're living with technology. You know, almost everything we have now has a chip in it. So I think it's helpful just to kind of function and understand what it is we're dealing with, a little bit about the technology around us, and you know, just for trouble, as you mentioned, for troubleshooting, or just to for maybe even just a comfort level that you know, that these things exist to help us, to make us more efficient, to help us with different things through life. And I totally agree. Great, I think that's a great perspective.
And if for nothing else, just for appreciation value. I mean, a lot of us will never use science and or biology in our life or in our work endeavors later on in life, but to learn about God's great creation and how these things were made and how they form and function gives us at least that deep appreciation for what we've been given as a blessing by God. And technology can be exactly the same thing.
Sure.
It's basically a science that we can learn about.
Right.
Exactly. I was just going to say it kind of puts it all in perspective and makes it not a daunting thing, but a tool that we can use for God's purpose, you know, for us in our lives.
Yep. Great. Joe, thank you so much for taking the time to...
Oh, no problem.
You know, I'm sure you're swamped with, you know, back-to-school kinds of things, getting FBL ready for a new crop of students coming in and returning students. So I appreciate the time that you take, and certainly... We would wish that the Lord would bless your continued work there at FVL.
No problem. It was definitely my pleasure, and hopefully we can touch a few technological lives with some of these discussions.
Good. Absolutely. Thanks, Joe.
God's blessings, guys.
Thanks.
Bye.
Joe's probably got to be right in the midst of the back-to-school thing with his students and with his school. He's got a lot of responsibilities there. And, you know, kind of neat position to be in where you're a teacher but also heavily involved with technology.
Yeah, I think that's probably a dream job. I bet he has a lot of fun with that. Except when the computers go down.
That's
then
right.
You're thinking twice about it. But
that's right.
So, yeah, sounds like they have a lot of cool stuff going on there.
Yeah, he shared a lot of interesting ideas. I especially like the idea of being able to get access to your stuff, whether you're on campus or at home, same stuff. You don't have to transport it back and forth. You have access to the network right from your home computer. So. Good stuff. Thank you, Joe, for joining us. On to our news and tech section. Something that just came out the last couple days is some news about Google Chrome. Google Chrome is the startup browser, obviously done by Google. It competes with Firefox and Internet Explorer and Opera and Safari, those kinds of things. And Google Chrome is supposedly the fastest, and I think it is very fast, but one thing that it hasn't had is the ability to use a lot of the extensions that Firefox uses that makes it so popular. And they still haven't added extensions, although I know that's coming. But one thing they have added that you have to use an extension for within Firefox is bookmark syncing. We've talked about Xmarks before, or Foxmarks it used to be called, which essentially allows you to sync up all of the browsers that you use with the same bookmarks. Bookmarks are obviously very important in the browsing world these days because the web is so large and you want to be able to go back to those frequent sites and bookmark them and tag them. Now with this bookmark syncing feature within Google Chrome, no matter what Chrome you open, you can sync those bookmarks across computers and across those installations of Google Chrome. So I think that makes it a lot more usable.
Yeah, I'm just... struggling with the concept of bookmarks versus something like Delicious or Digo. And just wondering, Martin, do you use both or do you use one or the other?
I use both.
You do.
I use Xmarks. I'm not, I don't use Chrome as my main browser. I use IE and Firefox. I kind of use IE for work and Firefox for home, but I use bookmark syncing across those for just the main syncs. These are bookmarks that I go to all the time.
core list.
Yeah, core list of about 30 mm-hmm. websites or locations that I do that for. I found that tools like Delicious or Digo, they don't give me the one-click access that I need, and that's
right.
what the bookmarks do, where they're right on your toolbar. And maybe there are probably extensions that do that for Delicious or Digo, but this is pretty easy and fairly transportable across browsers as well. So I use them both in combination. How about you?
That makes sense. And I guess, you know, now that you describe it that way, I do use bookmarks on my work computer for some of those, you know, go-to sites mm-hmm. that I really don't want to lose and go to regularly and that kind of thing. So, yeah, I could see the dual usage there.
Yeah, they don't change a lot. I probably would throw in a new bookmark, you know, every couple months that, you know, new service that I'm using. For instance, we've talked about Slide Rocket in the past. That's mm-hmm. the online PowerPoint tool. And so I've got a link to that so I don't have to go out and find that every time. And on my home computer, I've got a link to my banking site, you know, that kind of stuff. So, but this is good news, and I think Google Chrome is slowly catching up, and it's got the name Google behind it, so it probably will.
Yeah, I'm guessing that somehow, you know, it'll all come together with mm-hmm. my iGoogle page and my Gmail and my Google Docs to be one beautiful package. So.
Google Reader, the whole bit, yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Mm-hmm.
Picks of the week. Sally, what's your pick this week?
Well, Martin, I'm going to talk about the Acer K-12 value-added program, and this is a way for you to try out a netbook. We were talking about netbooks earlier in the school setting, and they actually have a program going on right now where you can sign up and try a netbook for free for 30 days, and at the end of the 30 days, if you want to purchase it, you can for a reduced price. I think it's only $199 to purchase the system.
Mm-hmm.
But you can only purchase one at that price. But the big deal is if you participate in the program, they're actually giving away one complete computer lab and then three entire classrooms of netbooks, maximum of 30, for your school. So
cool.
It's a great way to sign up and potentially win some free equipment for your school as well.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're curious about netbooks, maybe this is the way to have the chance to try them out. You have to sign up on their website by August 31st. So that deadline is coming right up. But this may be a program that you'd want to look to for your school just to try it out. There are some telephone conference calls that you have to participate in as part of the program. I think you have to be in two calls total.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems like a pretty small price to pay to try out a netbook and potentially win some for your school.
Right. Sweet. Why not, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Thanks, Sally. My pick is a subscription service to a site called SafariBooksOnline.com. And this is for our, you know, fairly technical listeners. It's essentially a site where you can subscribe and read online books about almost anything in the technology area, whether it be programming, hardware, IT management, networking, operating systems, security, you know, even some general business books. But if you are in need of learning about a particular technology, let's say you wanted to learn more about JavaScript, or you wanted to learn about CSS, or HTML even, and get smarter there, this is a service that allows you to do that reading online without going to the bookstore or to Amazon or Barnes & Noble. And Sally, you're aware, I'm sure, of buying these technical books. They're expensive.
Absolutely.
So they run 30, 40, 50, 60 bucks sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
This service allows you to only buy what you need. You do have to read it online, although there is a service here that you pay a little bit more and you can download them and print them out to PDF. But I find it just as easy to read them online. You can search through them, which is awesome as far as a technology reference book. And the price is very reasonable. If you just want to do it for a month, it's $10 a month. That gives you a 5-slot bookshelf, meaning you can put 5 books on your shelf for reading in any given month. Now, once you put them there, you have to leave them there for 30 days. But once the 30 days expires, you can take one off and put another one on. So this is a very timely tool for anybody who needs to bone up on a particular technology and do it in a very inexpensive fashion. So for $10 a month, you can get 5 books. And these are all fairly recent titles. They're not just five-year-old technology. We use a technology called InfoPath, which ties in with our SharePoint installation here in the Synod office. And the latest books that you could find at Barnes & Noble or Amazon or any of those places are there. So I was able to put one on my shelf, read that, and essentially learn the technology without paying the $50 that they wanted for the book itself. So great deal here. There's a 10-slot bookshelf, which is $23 a month. And this gets cheaper if you do a whole year, which is what I did. So $110 per year, you've got a 5-slot bookshelf. And very cool. You can do bookmarks. You can do note-taking, annotating. All of these books are then always at your disposal. And they got a large selection here. So I think this is a great tool or a great resource that anybody who has a need to learn technology kind of on the fly or wants to get smarter in, you know, any particular software product, maybe it's a desktop application or desktop publishing or database, something like that, this is a great resource.
Yeah, a large supply is kind of an understatement. Over 8,000 resources. That is quite impressive, and being able to search and find what you're looking for makes it a really powerful tool.
Yep. Yeah, this has only grown over the past few years. It started out only being O'Reilly books, you know, the books with all the animals on them, and they've branched out to many, many different technology publishers. So safaribooksonline.com. Give it a try.
Good stuff. Thanks, Martin.
Sure. And going on to our community feedback section, who's talking to us this week, Sally?
Well, you might remember that last week we were talking about getting audio files from video files. Mm-hmm. And we heard from Alan Bunt, who's at Good Shepherd in Wisconsin Rapids, Wisconsin. And he uses a free program called Jodix, J-O-D-I-X. And he provided a link to that. We'll include it in the show notes. He says it's 3 times faster than using Audacity and can do an average 1-hour WMV file to MP3 format in 5 minutes. So
cool.
That's some serious speed there. So Alan's ranked it as one of his top programs, and I think maybe it's worth a look if you're doing any kind of audio processing, especially from video.
Sounds like a very cool tool. As I recall, last week we were talking about stripping audio from a YouTube video, right? Was that the tool you were talking about?
Well, actually both.
Oh, we had a couple.
There was a website for getting it specifically from YouTube videos, but then someone was actually just dealing with raw files and trying to find the most efficient way to get the audio from maybe an AVI or a WMV or something like that.
Yeah, at that speed, it doesn't even pay then to try and do a double recording, you know, do the video and do the audio on a separate device. You can just grab your video, which may be your primary, and then strip the audio right out. So,
definitely.
Cool. Thank you, Alan.
Yep. Next up, we heard from some of our Wells Tech
Twitterers.
That's quite a word. I wonder if it's a dictionary.
I think we're getting better at it.
Yeah. We heard from Jason Schmidt, who's out at Gethsemane in Omaha, Nebraska, and he pointed us to a website, Geocaching for Educators. Mm-hmm. And if you guys aren't aware of geocaching, it's basically a global treasure hunt, a hide-and-seek with GPS units, and it offers a lot of educational potential because you're, doing latitude and longitude, making calculations, things like that. And also, you know, visiting sites and learning about new areas of your world around you that are just really exciting and interesting for students as well. So if you're thinking of maybe incorporating some geocaching into your classroom setting, you definitely want to check out the Geocaching for Educators. It's actually a Wikispace page that they've put together, and there's lots of project ideas and events and training and all kinds of good stuff here on this website.
Sal, are you still geocaching yourself?
Well, we are, but there's not as much opportunity in Sleepy Eye as there was in the Milwaukee area, but when we travel, we always pick up geocaching. along the route and everything. We broke 200. We found 200 this summer, and so that was a big deal for us. And we, one of the most important thing or most exciting things about geocaching for us is something called travel bugs, where you actually send a item out that has a serial number associated with it, and people track it along the way as it moves from cache to cache. And we released a series of travel bugs down in Mississippi one Christmas. I think it was in 2006. And one of them is actually in Austria right now.
Is that right? Cool.
It made it across the pond, and it's been to England and Germany, and now it's in Austria. So that's really amazing to follow your travel bug around the world.
Nice geography lesson.
Yeah, exactly. Kids. That would fit in with your education theme as well.
Very cool. Good.
Very fun stuff. And next up, Jason shared a link to us about MailChimp webinars. So if you're just getting started with the email software MailChimp, where you can send out mass email to your subscribers, then you might want to tune in to one of their free webinars, and they have them pretty much going around the clock. So we'll include a link in the show notes to their schedule of webinars, and it's a great way to get started with their tool set and have them walk you through the ins and outs of how to use it the best way.
Cool.
Yeah. And speaking of webinars, we also heard from Ryan Rosenthal via Twitter. He's at Faith in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin, and I guess this is a triumph that we got his Wells Tech tweets this time. He's having some trouble getting them through to us, but he tweeted about the Learn 360 webinars, and Learn 360 is an educational video site that our parish schools office has partnered with, and it's a great way for teachers to bring a variety of video lessons into the classroom. And apparently they have a series of webinars as well, and he found them to just be very useful. And he's apparently been a Learn 360 user in the past, but he learned quite a bit from these webinars. So he said he had no idea how little he knew until he did the webinars. So if you haven't had a chance to participate in those, you might want to check out the Learn 360 webinars as well.
Great time to do that just before school starts. Get ready for using those in the classroom.
Yep. And next up, we heard from Philip Wells, who's a member of St. Paul's in New Ulm, Minnesota. And Philip was actually asking about running some congregational tech sessions where maybe he trained people or gave people behind the scenes look at what Facebook is, or other tools that might be out there that people are hearing about but don't really understand. And I could relate to Philip having this thought, because it's kind of what I did this summer with our summer Tuesday tech time, we called it, our adult computer ed classes. We kind of originally started the summer with, we're going to do some stuff and have hands-on time, but it turned more into a lecture kind of thing where I was just lifting the curtain and showing them behind the scenes of what is Facebook or what is Twitter or what do you do with RSS feeds, or, you know, whatever the topic was for the evening. And from personal experience, I can say that they went over really well in our congregation. We had good attendance and lots of interest, and also just a really good way to meet new people and make new friends, and kind of an evangelism almost outreach, you know, event for our church where we gathered around this topic and everybody has an interest in it. And then, you know, we made some new friends along the way. So not a bad idea, Phil.
I think that's a great idea, especially for congregations with schools who have computer labs probably already. So you have the ability to bring people in. And I think this would fly well almost anywhere. And you don't have to be overly technical to lead these. I know some of the topics that you touched on, Sally, you don't need to necessarily be a dyed-in-the-wool technologist to kind of bone up on and share.
Right. This was more of just a show-and-tell kind of thing. Very relaxed, and people just really appreciated it. Given the chance to discuss it, you know, kind of gather around the topic, and everybody had some input and experience around the different things that we were talking about. So, yeah, a very, very successful program for us, and I think we'll be repeating it. And so I guess that's the caution, Phil. If you do it, you might be in a position to be called on to do it again, because I think it's appreciated.
Awesome. Thanks for all the community feedback. As usual, go to WellsTech.wells.net. to leave your comment or to find other ways to contact us. WellsTech@wells.net is our email address. We have a voicemail line. We have a Facebook page, facebook.com/WellsTech. Use any of those resources. We will hear you and we'll share your stuff. So take advantage of the community that we're trying to build that is Wells Tech.
Next week, Martin?
Next week, we are going to be joined by Gail Potratz once again, our once-a-month visitor, and we're going to be talking about one-to-one computing.
Don't go to the computer lab and sit and use the computers. They have the computers with them at all times accessible.
That's right.
With the netbook concept especially in mind.
Okay. So next week, Gail will be joining us and talking about that one-student-to-one-computer relationship and how that can be used to enhance or enlighten the educational experience. So join us next week for episode 94. We're coming up on episode 100, Sally, and we're still looking for good ideas to kind of kick that show off. We've heard from a few folks about some decent things we can do. If you have ideas, let us know. Kind of a big deal for us.
Yeah, it's hard to believe. Episode 100 will be near the beginning of October, I believe, mm-hmm. So not far away.
Right. So mark that on your calendar. All right, let's close the show, as we always do, with the beautiful music of In His Service, their song, O God, Your Hand, The Heavens Made, from the album In His Time. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We will talk to you next week. Thank you.